Who would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flat in the shot. What a goal!
Welcome, everybody. It's your latest and greatest Wolves Fancast feature, Fancast Fridays. We're here to kick off your footballing weekend with a look forward to what Wolves are up to. And this week, as we know, Tottenham Hotspur arrive at Molineux on Sunday afternoon. A little bit of spice added to the fixture with the fact that it's the 100th game between the two clubs. Is that the most significant thing going on, Dan?
Might be. I think there's a few things we can talk about, but we'll go through that in the show, yeah.
Feels like a moment. But yeah, as we all know, Nuno Espirito Santo returns to Molineux. Bruno Lage plays his first league game at Molineux, and it has all the ingredients for being an absolute classic Sunday afternoon fixture on the telly box, as we know. And really, I just want to kick off, Dan, by talking a little bit about last week. The burning question on everybody's lips, I think, is what the hell happened to you on Saturday night?
Little Don turned up. there's little Dan who's just an annoying prick, and then there's little Don who gets absolutely wasted and starts posting stupid tweets and going live on Instagram playing pool and just chatting shit. I apologise for my behaviour. I'm trying to learn. You look nice.
Viewers did come across Dan on Saturday afternoon, evening, night, wherever it was. Drop a comment to see, give us a one-word description of his behaviour, and we'll see if we can read some out, because that'll be entertaining. But I know we've got the pod out, obviously, reviewing the Leicester fixture. I've done GTA as well. Dan, your thoughts in brief on the performance, really?
I was more than happy with the way we played against Leicester. I was massively frustrated with a few of the comments that I heard outside the pub in Leicester about how we were shit. If we were shit last week, Wolves fans have never seen us be shit in their life. I thought we were a good value, at least for a draw. I thought we were massively unfortunate not to... We could have won that game. We had enough chance in that second half. People were disappointed in the first half of the game, but at the end of the day, we're still a counter-attacking team. Apart from the goal and the Tielemans shot from distance, I never felt we were in any trouble. And obviously, the chance that Adama missed in the first half was probably key to us falling short on the day.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I felt like we had Leicester on the ropes for periods. Maybe not to an overwhelming extent where you thought, you know what, they're going to go on and win the game or anything, but an equaliser looked likely, especially for the majority of that second half. And unfortunately, weren't able to get off the mark for the Bruno era. But does that give you optimism going into the game on Sunday?
Oh, massively. I said to you off air, just that it's going to be a special occasion on Sunday with obviously the return of Nuno. The return of Jimenez to a full capacity Molineux is massive for me on Sunday. And I think, fingers crossed, the atmosphere will get us over the line for 3 points.
Yeah, like you say, I think so many different ingredients are going to make up this game that, you know, obviously we've been out without a proper Molineux fixture for 18 months. I know certain fans of us went to the Man United game at the end of last season, but, you know, can you really match that up to what we're going to feel on Sunday afternoon?
It's just going to be special. From the moment both team buses turn up, the atmosphere is going to be tense, I think. As long as Tottenham don't get an early goal to sort of dampen that atmosphere, I can't see us not winning this game. Kirby enthusiasm music.
I mean, it would just be Nuno to kind of kill a home atmosphere, wouldn't it, with quite a dour first half. You know, like they say, quiet in the crowd. And Wolves fans notoriously edgy at times, over the years. But I do just feel like as if everyone's just going to be happy to be in the stadium again and, you know, get the place rocking.
That's what it's all about. That's the reason why we pay the money to go. We all work hard, Monday to Friday. Some people work Monday to Sunday. We pay to go and see Wolves play, whether we're in League 2 or flipping the Europa League. It's this is what we pay our money for. So let's get behind the team on Sunday, and hopefully we'll stick it right up Nuno's trumpet.
Well, I mean, the whole idea of Fancast Fridays, guys, this season is that we're going to be getting Wolves fans on, we'll be getting opposition fans on, getting all the different views that we could possibly get. And every week we want you to come in and let us know if you want to get involved. I mean, we've got a few guys lined up, a couple of Spurs fans, a couple of Wolves fans as well. So, you know, if you think that you've got something you want to say and want to share with the world, obviously next week, before we go live, make sure you drop us a DM and we can look to get you involved. I think, Dan, are we ready to get our first Spurs fan on? Or
I think he might be a bit nervous because he hasn't turned up yet. So I'll just quickly just ask you, what was your sort of thoughts on the Leicester performance?
I think, well, yeah, I mean, covered it in GTA, guys. So if anybody hasn't caught that, make sure you get over to the YouTube channel and have a look at the last video from myself. But yeah, ultimately, it was quite a tentative first half. I don't think we expected us to go all guns blazing anyway. Leicester are a good side. They've got dangerous players. But once we got a foothold in the game and we got comfortable playing the way that Bruno wants us to play, and I think we saw that in the second half for sure. You know, the guys had a bit of a lease of life about them. And I just think that, you know, no talented footballer wants to go out and play a boring game of football. You know, it just ain't the way. And a lot of players who would have been stifled last season looked to probably be a little bit more liberated. And I think there was no better example of that than Ruben Neves. And you just saw him 10, 20 yards higher up the pitch, able to influence a game. And I thought second half, he ran the show, really. So I think that's something that we're going to have, you know, more to look forward to. And when you're getting talented technical players like that on the ball in more dangerous areas of the pitch, I'm expecting results. And Tottenham, you know, they've had a bit of a dodgy year or two with the end of the Pochettino era, the start of the Jose Mourinho reign as well. They don't necessarily strike that much fear into the hearts. You know, we've obviously got the Harry Kane saga ongoing. And, you know, you feel like we've got a sniff of a chance if we go out and play the way we did in the second half against Leicester.
Yeah, I don't want to over-gas our performance against Leicester because obviously they were missing a few key players as much as we were, but I think when you look at the difference between Leicester and Tottenham, Leicester just seems so much more of a solid unit than Tottenham are. I think defensively, Tottenham are there to be got at. Tanganga did really well against sort of Sterling and sort of Mahrez when he played against Sunday. But I just feel like Leicester is so much more than Tottenham. I think we should have enough to beat Tottenham on Sunday.
Yeah, I think Leicester showed that, you know, given the success they've had over the last couple of years, they built up a level of resilience, probably you'd say, that took them through that second half. You know, it wasn't a total bombardment, but, you know, they were able to stand up to it and say, you know what, you know, we're not going to concede a goal now. But if that was Spurs, you'd suggest, you know, there might have been a bit of flakiness, which allowed Wolves in and maybe would have got a goal against a team like Spurs. You know, they might have maybe not been beaten to a header, you know, cross coming into the box, not quite dealt with it. Just little things like that that take a little bit of, not necessarily tactical nous or anything like that, but just a bit of heart and determination to make sure that you don't get on the wrong end of a situation.
I think you've mentioned sort of the resilience there. The squad depth that Leicester have built over the few years, I mentioned just that they've had a few injuries on Sunday. But they had sort of Ricardo Pereira and Ryan Bertrand fullback, who aren't their natural sort of fullbacks in the last sort of 12, 18 months. I thought that just shows how far Leicester have come, which I said last week on the Leicester Fancast Friday episode, that I'll get frustrated being compared to Leicester because they're so much more ahead of us in sort of progression. And their recruitment has just been second to none, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, it has. It's envious. Yeah, envious is probably the word that we would have to be, I guess, because yeah, we were on a level pegging, I think, a couple of years ago. You still remember the Claude Puel reign and the way that we took them apart at home when we beat them 4-3. You know, they got back into the game, but I always felt that we were dominant in that fixture. You know, we went 3-1 up. Jota was getting a hat-trick. It was the height of, you know, exciting football that Nuno's team provided at the time. and you look at where things have gone from there. Yes, we've had the Europa League, and yes, we've been absolutely, you know, running to the ground as a unit and a bunch of players. But Leicester have just gone from strength to strength in the way that they've appointed their manager. I think he's a massive part of it, Brendan Rodgers. But also, like you say, reinvested, you know, some of the expensive sales that they made, like Harry Maguire, and that, you know, they've gone on to show that they haven't missed any of those players.
No, Matthew, I mentioned this last week, the conveyor belt of players that they've had depart for the fees that they've managed to get for them, Maguire, Chilwell, Kante, Mahrez, Danny Drinkwater went for good money, which people forget about. We haven't had those players leave, apart from Jota. We haven't had that conveyor belt of departure. So when Wolves fans want us to be on a sort of level playing field with Leicester in regards to expenditure and stadium rebuilds, we're not in that calibre.
Nah.
It's frustrating because Fosun sold us a dream that we were going to be Champions League finalists in a 10-year plan.
Yeah.
But we've all followed football enough years of our life to realise football doesn't come that easy. Not like it used to in the sort of 90s when Newcastle and Blackburn were bankrolling teams. It's not that easy now with FFP. Do you want to have a look at the previous meetings before we get our Spurs guest on?
Yeah, let's go for it. Let's go for it.
Well, you did mention earlier that it's our 100th meeting on Sunday.
The commemorative pendant going to be exchanged between the two captains, mate.
Must be something special. So we've got 14 Premier League ties between Wolves and Tottenham since the Premier League was founded. Wolves 4 wins, Tottenham 7 wins, 4 draws. We've only kept 2 clean sheets in 14 Premier League games, which is not great, is it?
To be fair, there have been some great games in there, haven't there, as well? I still remember the 3-3 between us under Mick McCarthy.
Yeah.
When Stephen Fletcher scored the headed equaliser at the end. I think Jermaine Defoe and Pavlyuchenko scored a couple of really good goals for him. That was an unbelievable game. And, you know, Wolves-Tottenham games don't tend to be drab affairs at all. We think about the Wembley game when we won 3-1. You know, Raul Jimenez with that, you know, squeezing one in, Costa going through in the last minute. I mean, I wasn't there. Was you at that game?
Was this the 3-1 you say?
At Wembley, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favourite away days of following Wolves, to be honest, because sort of first off, we were quite under the cosh for quite a bit of it. Obviously, Kane scores an absolute thunderbolt with his left foot from distance. Patricio made an amazing save from Christian Eriksen in the first half. But then as soon as we got the equaliser, it just seemed like it was a Nuno masterclass of just keep the ball moving, keep them chasing shadows. And then in the second half, we'll just beat them with fitness. And obviously, Bolly gets his header. And then Jimenez gets his goals as well as Costa late at the end. It was just a really good away day for Wolves on the Nuno era.
And who could forget our first visit to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well? Because that was, I mean, the last away day before this season that we all went to. 3-2 victory. Again, you know, that real thrilling kind of forward line at their best. It was Traore, Jota, Jimenez. They all had a big influence on that game. And there you go, like you say, the winning goal from a lovely angle there, actually. That's a fan cam, I'm assuming. But, you know, we didn't get to see that level of excitement, unfortunately, from Nuno thereafter, did we, and that team?
No, I mean, I've been ridiculed numerous times, but that seemed to be the last sort of Wolves capacity crowd, which got us over the line. I think the game after that was Brighton at home, and then the pandemic properly hit. Let's get back to previous meetings. Wolves have won just one of their 7 Premier League matches at Molineux against Spurs, 2 draws, 4 losses. A Dave Jones winner in February 21 was last time we beat them. Snowy night, one of the most sorted. Say again.
What a goal that was. I think it was about 17 passes or something that led to the move.
It was not a typical Mick McCarthy goal, was it?
He was prime Andrea Pirlo in that little spell. Dave Jones came into the team and he honestly was unbelievable for about, you know, 2 or 3 months that led to us kind of climbing the table and staying in the league.
Massively underrated, Dave Jones was very, very left-footed, but you hear like some of his teammate comments and they all said how good he was on the ball, how he could dictate tempo.
Yeah.
Really underrated player in that Wolves era with his best mate, Kyle Emery.
He's been in the he's been in the news this week. I think he's taking a player coach job at Wrexham.
They're spending big money on Wrexham with
Ryan Reynolds.
And Ryan Reynolds, yeah.
He must be Hollywood then. He must be Hollywood. Yeah, as mentioned then, 100th fixture between the two clubs, you know. Two pretty storied English football clubs over the years. Obviously, Spurs were the first club to do the double, I think, back in 1960. Wolves were having a pretty good era around that time as well. But, you know, contested the first UEFA Cup final between each other as well in 1972 over two legs. Unfortunately, we lost that game. But, you know, I mean, like I say, it's just that so many ingredients to this game that are, you know, setting it up nicely. And the most kind of interesting one, I think, is going to be the fact that Nuno's coming back to Molineux. And there's been lots of talk about, you know, the way we'll be receiving him and how we should look to welcome him back to the stadium, you know, for the first time since he departed. Lots of conjecture about the reason that he left, you know, talk of the fact that he wanted to go home, have a break, you know, he's missing his family, all this kind of stuff. Lo and behold, he's taking a job in London. What did you make of all that? And what are your feelings towards Nuno at this moment in time?
I don't understand the level of animosity that's got thrown towards the guy for how quickly he got us to where he did. The way he revolutionised the club from that Austrian pre-season tour to picking Connor Cody out of a plane full of bang average players, to be honest, to make him pivotal as our leader and the way we played in that back five. I'll be giving him a clap at a kickoff, but as soon as that whistle goes, I'll be calling him a wanker like every other opposition manager that turns up in that dugout. This will be the eighth time that Nuno Espírito Santo has faced a fellow Portuguese manager in the Premier League, winning just two of the previous seven meetings. So yeah, it's going to be a good game on Sunday, and we've got Ricky Sachs here from the Last Word on Spurs. How you doing, Ricky?
Hey guys, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, good. Great to see you.
Nice seeing you guys too. Hope you're well.
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad. Sorry, Dan,
hitting with the attack, Gully. What's your
hitting with the attack? Oh yeah, this is coming at your interview style. You're dressed for a job interview by the looks of it. So you know,
we try, my friend. We try.
I think obviously Spurs. It's never really a boring summer at such a high profile club, and there's always things going on. This summer being no different. But I think what I just wanted to get an idea of from your perspective is kind of the state that Jose Mourinho left the club in and what really needed fixing over the summer, because obviously you brought in Nuno. There's all the talk about Harry Kane. We all know about that. But in your eyes, what do you think is the fundamental problem?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're not even touched upon the main issues that Spurs got at the moment in terms of trying to rebuild from Mourinho. I think that process in itself takes a bit of time. I think United are still going through that right now, if I'm being honest with you. I don't think it's easy. I think Spurs are in a situation where they're back in a transition where they were really before Poch even took charge. We're kind of back there again now. It's funny, the Nuno appointment, I've got to be honest with you guys, I mean, I saw a lot of different, you know, comments from Wolves fans. You know, I mean, I think from what I gauged from the outside was that I felt like with Nuno it kind of reached that course where it needed a bit of a break. That's the kind of vibe I got, really, if I'm being honest with you. I think from the outside, I always admired Nuno as a very honourable man. Thought he spoke ever so well. Thought he was quite organised, disciplined in his approach. If I look at his first couple of seasons in charge of Wolves, I thought really they looked organised. I think he had the best defence alongside the likes of City and Liverpool at one point. That's how formidable that defence was. I mean, I know there was an element of where maybe fans wanted the teams a bit more attacking, but are affording that the case that you can only work with the group you've got to some degree, and you've got to only get the best strengths out of the players you've got there. And I think at Tottenham, I do think this is no disrespect to you guys. I think obviously he's working with a better calibre of players. But again, I think it's tricky because he's got his hands tied behind his back. He's come through the door. The star striker, the poster boy of the football club, wants to go. Tungi and Ndombele is now throwing his toys out the pram. He also wants to go. He's not an easy start to life at Tottenham, to be honest with you. And I'm so pleased for him that he got that win last week, because you guys know what it's like, the media narrative. You know, it's always been about the top six or the big four. And, you know, Spurs have featured prominently within that over the last few years. But, you know, the constant 24/7 headline on any news media train you read is Harry Kane. Where's Harry Kane going to go? What's going to happen to Harry Kane? Are Spurs going to fall apart? And I think that really galvanised the group last week. I think they came together, they fought as one, fought for the shirt. It was a really impressive performance against Manchester City. But for me, the challenge is Wolves. And I'll tell you why, for me, it is more of a benchmarker. Because I'm very interested and intrigued to see how Nuno goes and sets up against a team of your calibre. Will he put 10 behind the ball and try and go on the counter? Or will he actually go for the throw? And I mean that, obviously, in a nice possible way, where obviously he goes there to get the result. And, you know, he does go on the front foot, wants to go there, take the game to the opposition. Because no disrespect to Wolves, I mean, Tottenham, for what they want to be achieving in terms of, you know, Premier League, they want to be up there competing for the top four. You know, it's not only that long ago Spurs were in a Champions League final. I'm not saying that we're in a position to be there at the moment. We certainly aren't. But, you know, there's players in that squad that were part of that team. So, you know, it is a rebuilding job. But I do think Nuno will surprise people this season. It all depends on how Spurs finish his transfer window. If we sell Harry Kane and we don't get in an adequate replacement, which, to be fair, I mean, listen, Harry Kane is one of the best players in the world, in my opinion. So trying to find a replacement for Harry Kane is hard enough. But when you think about Spurs also needing another striker, regardless of if Kane stays or leaves, and you've got the Ndombele situation where they're going to be losing a creative player, although the attitude is questionable at the moment, but Spurs will need to get someone else in. You just feel there's a lot of work that Spurs needs to do between now and the end of the window, but that shouldn't distract them from the fact that Wolves is a winnable game. And I think if Spurs play to their potential, they should get the result. But Wolves, I'm concerned because it's always difficult up at Molineux. I think you look at the case that, you know, it's a new manager there. I know he didn't get the result last weekend, but it's his first game at home. I think that will play a massive part. I think the fans will be massively behind him, always passionate. It's always trickier. Never have an easy game when we go up to Wolves, to be honest with you. In the last few years, I think we drew up there last year, late to a late header. I think from Saka.
We're still a bit bitter about that one, Ricky, if I'm honest. All the yellow cards and the Traore attack.
Do you know what? I mean, do you know what's funny about that game? I mean, what I couldn't quite understand is Spurs went one up, sat back. It's almost like we were waiting to concede. It wasn't a case of that, you know, we were going to win the game. We just felt, when's the goal coming? And I think if the game went on for 10, 15 minutes more, Wolves probably would have won it, if I'm being honest with you. And that's what I mean. That approach there just isn't suitable for Tottenham and what they want to achieve and what they want to do. And, you know, this is what I'm concerned about, really, in terms of, I'll be interested to see on Sunday, the benchmarker, whether we go to Wolves and we're going there to win, whether we are going to sit back, try and soak up pressure, hit Wolves on the counter-attack. I just think Tottenham, you know, for a club of their dimension, for what they want to be achieving, they need to go to Wolves and, you know, play the football and get the result. And I don't think it'll be easy. I think Wolves will make it difficult.
You mentioned just, Ricky, that you like how the way Nuno is composed in the way he talks. I actually watched his pre-match press conference earlier because I was intrigued to see what he was going to say about returning to Wolves and whatnot. And the Wolves fans will know, sort of, Nuno, pretty much press conference bingo. The words compact, balance, organised, all turned up. That's some words you have to get used to, Ricky. Do you really believe there's that big a gulf between the two squads when you take out Harry Kane?
I still believe, you know, some of Tottenham's quality in that squad is still just above Wolves. I'll be honest with you. I still think Tottenham, for where... I mean, listen, it's just, you saw, you know, with Pochettino, he took this squad to unbelievable depths of level. You know, Spurs were competing and they were in the top four regularly under Pochettino and they got to a Champions League final. And I think, you know, although this squad has reached a point where it does need a rebuild and a refresh, I do think it's a big gulf between the two clubs still. And it's no disrespect because I think Wolves are building, you know, their own project now. They're building again and good luck to them. They're a good side and it's a good, loyal set of fans. I think Tottenham, again, for where we want to be, I think Spurs have to be aiming to get into that top four as a minimum, you know. I mean, look at Spurs' stadium, the training ground. It's of an elite level. I've got to be honest with you guys, you know, for what... This is the frustration as Tottenham fans, if you speak to Spurs fans. It's just that when you look at Spurs, what they've done off the pitch in comparison to on it, if only we had the investment on the pitch as we had off it, we'd be a formidable football club. But, you know, that's the issue with Tottenham. That's always been the problem, that, you know, the investment hasn't quite been enough to ever get Tottenham over the line. We always go into a transfer window and we always come out of it always feeling that there's one or two more that we needed. And this won't be any different, I feel, with Tottenham. I don't think this will be a window where we'll come out and we'll be, you know, happy about everything we've done. You know, it's tricky. But I do think, to answer your question, to not skip around the houses, I do think Spurs' squad is a bit more superior to Wolves. But it won't be an easy game. I think it'll be very, very tough. Very tough indeed.
We've got another question from, obviously, the comment section. Metallic UK, question for Ricky. How much would a club need to offer for Tanguy and Ndombele? He thinks he'd suit Wolves at Molineux.
Yeah, I mean, he's a wonderful player. The problem with Tungi is I just don't quite know what the guy wants. I think the problem is I think he's got big eyes where he thinks he can get a move to Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. And no disrespect to him, those clubs, first and foremost, you know, no matter what you think of those clubs and what they pay, the first thing you need is attitude, application, desire. You know, if you haven't got those things, don't bother. Don't even bother. You know, it's just, this is what I mean. This is what frustrates me so much. He has got unbelievable talent. He's one of the most talented players in the squad. Probably one of the most talented players I've actually ever seen in the flesh. I think he's... Some of the stuff he does on the ball is absolutely unreal. He is a throwback to a street footballer. He really is. He's an awesome player. If only we could have, I was going to say, if only we could have Harry Kane's work ethic, but the way he's been acting the last month or so, I'm not sure I'm going to say that. if only we could have somebody, you know, that, you know, give him, you know, someone that's got an unbelievable attitude and desire to work, he would be a phenomenal player. And the problem is, you know, it's all very well having the talent, but, you know, and it's a well-known quote, you know, talent is nothing without hard work, right? We all know that. Yeah. So if he's not willing to put the work in, then he's really of no use to Tottenham. And, you know, we've got 12 days of the window to go. I was always, you know, I'd never wanted to see him leave the club. I'm at a point now, I'm just so frustrated. If the opportunity comes up, I think Spurs need to have a look at maybe potentially an exchange of a player, depending on who that would be, or just trying to cash in and get some money back on him. But it's very hard. I mean, he cost us, what, upwards of 42 million, 45 million, I think up to 60 million, I might be wrong. So, I mean, let's be fair, I don't think he'd be in Wolves's... He won't be in Wolves' thoughts. I don't think the kind of level of fee that you guys be after. Yeah. But of course, he'd come and improve the squad. The thing with Ndombele is he'd come and improve anybody's squad. But the thing is, if the attitude's not there, then there's no point. There really isn't any point.
So you want to space jam him into Harry Winks?
Oh, my God. Don't get me started. Bless him, Harry Winks. Oh, dear. I'm so sorry for that guy. Every time we do a show, I just hope Harry's, you know, not on social media or watching. I feel so sorry for him. I just think he's devoid of confidence, and it's hard to see a footballer really like that on the pitch.
He was in the England squad about 12 months ago, wasn't he? 18 months ago?
Yeah, do you know what, guys? I just don't know what's happened to him. Bless him. He's a lovely, lovely lad. Spurs at heart, been through the academy. I just think it's a point where everyone needs a reset. He needs a reset, needs a new club. We need to move him on. I just feel bad for him. I feel even bad, you know, when we do these post-match shows, especially when it's on YouTube and it's visual and we're... I won't say tearing into him, but we criticise him. I just don't really feel comfortable doing that because he's a lovely boy. And, you know, I just don't feel comfortable doing that to players. But ultimately, you know, as you guys are, you're there to have an opinion. If a player's not good enough, you've got to say how it is. And I just hope he gets that move before the end of the window. He needs it for him as well. For him and his family, I think, you know, as much as he's Tottenham through and through, for his own career and development, he needs to get away from Tottenham.
Just touching on that there, Ricky. Sorry, Gully. I had a conversation with Conor Cardia about a couple of months ago. And we had a conversation about football fans slating the players. And I sent him the highlights of our recent charity game. And I said, if you ever feel hurt by some of our words, look at this game. These are the people who are slating you on a day-to-day basis. So
speak for yourself, Dan. Speak for yourself.
you're right, to be fair. What footballers can't be taking podcast people like ourselves seriously, what we say, when 99% of the time we couldn't hit a cow's backside with a band.
Yeah, no, I get that. I just think also as fans, you know, when we are content creators or whatever you want to call us, you know, out there, I think we also got responsibility just to understand that, you know, a lot of these people, I think people forget, a lot of these people got families and a lot of them watch, you know, don't be surprised. A lot of, you know, this, the kind of content that has produced, it reaches footballers, it reaches players, it reaches agents, you know, they're well aware of what's been said. And I think we mustn't forget that, especially in the world we now live in with mental health and stuff. You know, I'm very cautious that, although it's a very well-paid job and it's got its luxuries, at the same time, football's football and it is about ability. And I think it's just trying to divide the two where it's all right to say a player's not good enough ability-wise. I just think there's a difference between, you know, and you guys know, it's a difference between abusing a player and questioning the ability of him. I just think for Winks, bless him, he seems like a lovely boy, but just not up to the level that we need now. We need to move him on. That's all I would say, really, in terms of ability of the player.
Could I just hit you with two more things before? Have you got anything else, Gully?
No, I was just going to say, the conversation about Ndombele, you probably want to stick Moussa Dembele in a time machine 5-6 years back.
Oh, mate, if only I could. What a player.
Right, just two more things, Ricky. What's your thoughts on Matt Doherty and what's your score prediction for Sunday?
Matt Doherty, for me, I think it's a case where, yeah, Matt Doherty needs a move as things stand at the moment. I think it's going to be hard because Japhet Tanganga was absolutely awesome last week at Man City. I think if he plays like that every week, I think Doherty will find it hard to get back in the team. Having said that, Nuno's here. He probably used him previously, knows him very, very well. Matt will probably feel like for him it's a chance to kind of, yeah, kind of get himself back on track at Tottenham. Is what's been a difficult first 12 months. Like I say, positional wise, he hasn't really been playing a position he wants to be. And yeah, like I say, it's been difficult for him. But, you know, I really hope for him sake it can still work out at Tottenham. But I do highly doubt that as things stand at the moment, he's going to have a huge Spurs career as things stand at the moment.
So where's your money on Sunday score prediction wise? Maybe give us a first goal scorer. He's bottled it, lads.
He's bottled it. Yeah, the key question.
London may have just become under attack. Bear with us while we do. I'm not sure what's going on there. You still there, Ricky?
I'm still here. Yeah, I'm still here, guys. I heard you there. Yeah, first goal scorer. I'm going to go with Lucas Moura. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Tottenham win.
Nice one, Ricky. Hopefully, I'll tweet you after the game Sunday saying you got that wrong. Enjoy your weekend.
You two guys, cheers, best up for the rest of the season apart from these two games, okay?
That's right. Take care.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
There's Ricky from the Last Word on Spurs. And joining us now, we've got Zach from the South Bank Molyneux Instagram page.
You all right, lads?
How you doing, Zach?
Yeah, all right, Gully. All right, Dan?
How you doing? Bought the bandana again today.
Oh, I've got it out of my hair. It goes in front of my face.
Is that a trademark for you?
It's becoming a trademark now. I'm gonna own it. It's mine.
You have to wear it on Sunday at the game then, because nobody will know who you are otherwise.
That's why I won't wear it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've talked a little bit about Spurs. I think we've mentioned, obviously, all the big things that are going on around this game. First game back in the stadium, et cetera, et cetera. Another thing that is worth mentioning is the fact that Raul Jimenez is making his return to Molineux to play in front of a home crowd after a horrific injury. And we've seen all the media that he's done this week about, you know, essentially he basically sees it as a miracle that he's alive. You know, there's bleeding on the brain and all those horrible things that you read in that article. I mean, how happy will you be to see Raul, Zach?
I think, like everybody, everybody's going to be ecstatic. I'm going to be ecstatic. It is a miracle that he's going to be playing. I mean, if you think back to Ryan Mason, for example, I mean, that was a horrific injury itself as well, and that ended his career on the spot. Petr Cech, also very, very fortunate to be playing after that. And the only reason he could play was because of his helmet that he had to wear after. So Raul it is a miracle. And we should all be blessed that he's still playing for us, because it was a very, very bad incident.
I can see it now by looking at you. You know, some Raul Jimenez headbands could probably do a good job in the club shop, I reckon.
Yeah, just get R9 across there, a little Mexican flag.
I'm not sure how they haven't even got these in the sports shop already.
honestly, club shop. Well,
they used to sell Tomori Ketsubo bald wigs in the club shop.
Let's talk about the club's commercial operations, the better,
exactly.
I think, at the moment.
Well, you mentioned earlier about trying to fund more ways to get more funding. There you go.
There you go. You heard it here first on the Fancast. Hopefully Vinny's tuning in tonight. Hello, mate.
Mexican bandanas.
I mean, Zach, were you a Nuno advocate? Were you happy that he moved on? Like, obviously, he's coming back. What were your thoughts at the time?
I was one of them where I was willing to give him another season. I thought, without the fans, it made a huge difference. I thought, give him another transfer window, see what he can do. But when it actually came out that he was leaving, I was more on the side of probably was the right time. And there was optimism in regards to surely they've got someone lined up, which they had someone lined up, which, like everybody else, they assumed I was going to get some backing. And so far, I'm a bit on the fence with the backing now, especially with reading the quotes of the last interview he's had before this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be strange seeing him in a different dugout. You know, clearly, apparently, he's dressed up to the nines now. No tracksuit jobby these days for Nuno. But with having seen, you know, last week's game against Leicester, Bruno, his take on the 3-4-3 and the way that we played in that fixture, do you feel like we've made the right step in the right direction?
Yeah. After the game last week, I've become cautiously optimistic about this season. I think the way that we played, especially in the second half, which everyone knows we're becoming more of a second half team again, but the way that we played, the energy that we put forward, going forward, it showed that we were actually, you know, we're intending to do something this season. The way that Bruno's lining us up, it looks like we're actually going to have a go. And with what he's got, I can't fault the lads on Saturday. They played brilliant. The only thing that was lacking was the goal. And that, you know, it was probably just one of them games where we just didn't have any luck that game. But yeah, the output, the energy, even the defence wasn't horrific, which a lot of people go on about. And considering it's makeshift, it weren't too bad.
I think a lot of the criticism of the defending was very harsh. Yeah, you know, in terms of volume of chances, there wasn't a fat lot, you know, from Leicester. They had, I think, the other decent chance they had was when Vardy went through in the second half and probably should have hit the target with a shot from just inside the box. But really, that goal, I reckon if Vardy runs across the front post and tries to finish that in the way he did, he's probably does it 5 times out of 100. You know, it was a ridiculous, you know, for it to loop over Jose Sarr as well. You know,
it was a great finish.
It was an unbelievable finish. And, you know, you've got to take your hat off to him there. But looking forward to this weekend, I'm hopeful of us getting on the score sheet. What do you think needs to change slightly from the Leicester game? Was it just a case of taking the chances that we got, or is there anything else that you think we could do going forward?
I think right now it'll be just the case of taking them chances, because if we did take them chances, I think we'd be coming away from there with 3 points. I think the first Adama miss, I think it was a couple of minutes later, was it, when Leicester scored after that?
Quite literally. Yeah,
if we'd have scored from that, you'd be looking at a different scoreline.
Quite literally?
Yeah, literally, yeah. for this weekend, I think we just go again. He's got an idea. The players have got to trust his idea. We just got to go for it with what players we've got available to us.
Yeah, I mean, Ricky from the Last Word on Spurs, I think he made the point that it probably was set up for Nuno to get a good result against Man City. First game of the season, played into his hands a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see how he does approach coming to Molineux and setting up, because in theory, you know, there's a host of attacking talent at Spurs. Whether that means he feels the need to go and take the initiative, you know, it wasn't necessarily his way at Wolves, but what are you expecting from him?
In theory, he should know our weaknesses and our strengths, so he should know how to beat us. But I like I said before, I'm cautiously optimistic, and I think that we could do them this weekend. I think with, like you've mentioned before, Raul Jimenez, his first appearance in front of the Wolves fans. Obviously, everybody back. The atmosphere is going to be rocking. Everyone's excited. I think that'll be enough, just enough to get us over the line. So whether he's got a plan or not, as Nuno's always got solutions, as we know, I don't think he's got the ones that got any solutions this weekend.
Bruno used solutions in his pre-match interview this week. So, you know. Have we got an imposter? Gonna put your neck on the line for a bit of a prediction for us, mate, if you can.
Yeah, I was originally going 1-1, but I'm going with 2-1 Wolves now. I have to. The closer this game's coming, the more optimistic I'm getting.
Not so, this week. Not the first game back. Not the first game with a full stadium. You know,
You've got to back them. We've got to back them.
No,
I think we'll be. I think, like I say, the atmosphere is going to be bouncing. So I fancy us against anyone when our stadium's rocking.
Place is going to be rocking, honestly. Yeah. Thank you for joining us anyway, Zach. Really appreciate it,
lads. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, Zach.
I'll see you soon, I'm sure.
Cheers, lads.
The guests keep coming thick and fast, aren't they?
Yeah, we've got Ian Matar with us now, Spurs fan.
How you doing, gents? You good?
Yeah, man. How you doing? Guys, Wolves fans in particular will know the finest set of barbershops in the city. The Empresario, we have the leader with us, yeah, Mr. Jimmy Trims himself. And
one of them, anyway.
One of them. But I don't know if some of the customers know, but Ian is a fully-fledged Spurs fan. And he's going to give us his take on things going on at the moment. So, I mean, we've had a little bit of a chat with another Spurs fan previous to this, Ian. I don't know if you caught that, but I really wanted to dig into the Harry Kane situation with you, if I'm honest, and what a palaver it's been, because I can't imagine it's settling anyone, and it's messing up your transfer window, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, the one thing I would say, Spurs are kind of used to this. It's not the first time we find ourselves in this position late in the window, having to sell a player who wants to go. It's not an ideal situation, but there's probably no better club to be in that situation, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of moving parts to it. I know that a lot of Spurs fans are very, quite rightly upset. But I think there's a lot more to the situation when you dig in deeper. I'm not going to sit here and defend Harry Kane, because I think him and his team especially have taken some very poor steps over the last 3 months in particular. And they're coming back to bite him. I think that there's a distinct lack of understanding of the negotiation situation he's in, which is very, very poor. But I do think there's more to it. I think he's a Spurs fan, and I think he's been lied to, just like every Spurs fan has over the last 4 or 5 years. I think what Levy's done this summer is great, but it's 3 years too late, and it's taken, you know, people like Kane to put his neck on the line and say, look, I don't want to play for the club unless this happens, for it to kind of happen. And I just feel like he's very, very fed up with it, and I don't kind of blame him. I think how he's gone about it is very poor. But the flip side to that is there's a number. The number is 150 million to come to the table for a UK club. I think he'll settle on 150 to 160 million. And the key is this needs to happen before Monday, Tuesday, because we're running out of time. What complicates things even further as a Spurs fan is the primary targets to replace him or even play up front with him have disappeared. They've gone. I think they were very keen on the Fiorentina striker who looks like he's going to either sign for Atletico.
Dusan Vlahovic, is that?
Yeah, but I'm hearing rumours now Man City might be doing it, but it's that gamesmanship. Lewandowski obviously throws a little bit on there. Not that we were ever kind of in with a sniff of him, but that might affect the market. But there's just not much out there. Ings, I mean, who are you going to kind of replace it? And you're not going to make that deal in 4 or 5 days. I think I got a lot of respect for the new director of football, Fabio Patrizzi. I think he's a fantastic addition. I think he's done very, very well. But I don't think he's got a trick up his sleeve to solve the striker crisis. Going forward, I think what will happen is I think they will probably sell him. And I think they will probably sell him late, which isn't what we want to hear. And I think they'll move Son to the kind of nine position and they'll look for wider players. You know, Torre is a very kind of common one that's banded around at the moment. Not who I would like to see there, but I think that's what they will do. I think they will go with a type of player like that, maybe two or three of them. And that's how they'll run the season. And again, it's just as a Spurs fan, it's not the route you want to go with over this last week, but I can probably guarantee it's probably the route that's going to happen.
I mean, you referenced kind of moving parts in the transfer window, and you just referenced, you know, being linked with a Wolves player as well in Adama Traore. And I think we're both in a similar boat in the sense that a departure could really unlock, you know, our own business. And we sold a couple of players, you know, this week. But really, we've spoken about it. That move, you know, Adama, I know you're not necessarily the biggest fan, but could you see it happening?
Yeah, I could definitely see it happening. I think they've always been keen on him. I think he misses that or lacks that last bit of end quality. But there's certainly a lot of players that are at Spurs. Bergwijn's one of them that don't have that either. So why not try and go for someone who's a little bit different? I think Son and Lucas have started the season very, very well. That's what I think. Two of the three positions are locked down now. I think the one's up for grabs. And I don't think anyone in the kind of football club at the moment is going to make a beeline for it, even though they've kind of brought in a few players. I think they're going to have to look at someone else. They're going to have to look at someone else in the Premier League. Personally, if it was me and Kane went, I'd go and spend 40 million the lad from Newcastle, Saint-Maximin. I think he's a quality player. I think he would fit very well. He knows the Premier League, brings an added dimension. I think Newcastle are a little bit weak. I think they give a good game in terms of protecting their players. But I think if you go in hard, I think that they'd probably give him up very, very quickly. That's who I would go with. That's who my choice is. I don't think there is a striker out there. Well, there isn't. I mean, Harry Kane's one of the best in the world. You're not going to kind of replace him. But I do think Spurs have got a conveyor belt of younger players that will be ready in 2 or 3 years. Troy Parrott, I speak very highly of him. He's on loan over at MK Dons as well. Far too soon for him. Dane Scarlett, I know, played yesterday. 17 years old, far too young for him. But there's some kind of green shoots there in 3 or 4 years of homegrown talent. And I think Spurs do it very well. Oliver Skip's coming through again. You know, the future's certainly, I know the Harry Kane situation is a bad one, but being a Spurs fan has been pretty poor over the last 2-3 years. Awful since Potter's gone, to be honest with you. It's been dark, dark times. Wrong move after wrong move. And just, unfortunately, Kane's a bad example of it. But the rest of the football club and how they're going about it and the Nuno hire, even though, again, very painful how we got to it, it does feel like a very positive place. And as a fan, you know, it's a great start to the season. What happened at City was exactly what we wanted. And with Wolves coming up, it almost feels, and I'm very much in agreement with the last kind of guest. I think it's the perfect time to take it. I think a lot of the things that you see as positives, I think are negatives. I think it will be far too emotional with the fans back for the first time. I think if it was a football club that had the same manager for a long time, if it was Nuno there as a Wolves manager, I think it'd be totally different, that crowd. But I think that crowd with a different manager, with a different team, for it being so long, I think it'll be a very key opening 10, 15 minutes. And I think in the previous games between us, those 10, 15 minutes have been fireworks. So we'll have to wait and see. A lot of it hinges on whether he decides to give Kane a go as well. Again, I think that changes the dynamic and very much takes the storyline in a different direction. And as we know, sometimes game or match day is all about the scenario, the storyline that's going on there. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays it.
I don't recall like a more narrative filled game for a while, actually, against between two clubs who don't necessarily have the history of, you know, drama and proper, you know, storylines and things. But there's so many ingredients to this. And I mean, being a Wolverhampton boy, you've probably been a bit closer to following Nuno's journey as a manager in the Premier League than many Spurs fans. What were your feelings initially, and have they changed since you've
seen them? I'm not going to lie, I was gutted, absolutely gutted. I mean, for me, it was a roller coaster of a summer. You know, like I was desperate for Poch to be back. Like when the news broke, I mean, it was a standing joke between me and my kind of friends how much I'm in love with Poch. I think he's perfect for the football club. I think it was a disaster getting rid of him. Nothing that has happened now would have happened kind of if Poch was there. I think at the very least would probably be in the same situation. And a lot of the problems he had were proven to be right. I know we're talking about Nuno, but just 1 second to say that, you know, to find Poch where he is now, PSG, surrounded by the players he is, honestly, I couldn't be happier for the man, to be honest with you. I just hope it's a real success there and it doesn't kind of go wrong for him there. But on Nuno, he wasn't my first choice. You know, there was a list of managers I wanted before, to be honest with you. When I found out, I was disappointed, and that was very much because of that last year. Like everybody, sucked into that last year at Wolves. When I did my research and I went back a bit further, past kind of Wolves and looked at his Valencia days, you know, I felt a lot more optimistic. And to be honest with you, I think this happens, and it has happened very much at Tottenham. Martin Yol's a great example. When it ends up being the person that we didn't expect, it tends to be the right person for the job. What one thing is, I do respect the director of football immensely, and he pushed leaving. It was almost make or break that he had to hire him after him saying no, and he got him kind of in. And what I would say is, I've been extremely impressed. I like you said, I knew his mannerisms, I knew how close he was, I knew the effort he made with the players, I knew he was big on the training ground, and I did feel that he was a perfect match for exactly what we needed right now. Someone very, very calm, someone who would focus on training and the team and the squad are not fit, and they are suddenly, it's no surprise, they've been craving that. So it ultimately, he has impressed me, and it is the right hire. It's just, you know, as a Spurs fan, you kind of wanted Nagelsmann, you wanted kind of Rose from Dortmund. There was some great managers out there, and there was never, you know what, there's never been a summer like it in terms of what happened in the transfer market, in terms of what happened for the managers. And it just feels, and again, let me say, I think it was the right hire, but with everything that kind of happened, it almost felt very kind of underwhelming and
And
I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. By design, he is very underwhelming, and how he handles his press conference is very underwhelming. And it's, again, you know, I could totally understand it. That's not what he wants to do. His work is on the training pitch. It's very obvious that he's.
I'd recommend not tuning into his press conferences from this point onwards, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been awful. The Harry Kane question has come up numerous times for him, and he's already, you can see that he's got standard questions for everything. He doesn't give much away. But I kind of like it. You know, he's been very brutal with the players he doesn't want. And Dembele's just, from the sounds of it today, been told to kind of almost pack your bags. This isn't kind of working out. So you know what? Spurs needed it. I think they had the wrong balance with Mourinho in terms of how he acted with them. So I think, you know what, for the football club, a lot of healing needs to go on. Whether he can push them to get to the top four, I'm not sure. I think there's no surprise his contract length is the same as Pochettino's over at PSG. So we'll see what happens. I hope he succeeds. And genuinely, I think the last 10, 15 years of kind of managers that have come our way, he's the one I kind of want to work the best, because I just feel like he's the nicest one out of the lot we've had for a very, very long time. Yeah. I really, really hope it's a success story for him. And I got to say, I feel like it's sort of set up for him, you know, like, he's come from one of the worst managers we've ever had. The crowds are back in there. The squad's responded. It was at a low kind of ebb. If Kane doesn't go, he's got one of the best strikers in the world. If he does go, he's got one of the best directors in football, you know, spending his 150 million. So I think he's in a good position. I really do. I don't think there's many managers that we'd have rather in this kind of situation, personally.
So when you've spoken about it, what are you expecting from this Sunday?
I don't want to cop out, but I think the first 10 minutes are key. If the first 10 minutes are boring football and Spurs play a little bit like they did yesterday, I think it's going to be a dull, awful kind of game where it's 0-0, 1-0. I think Spurs squeak it. If there's some fireworks, I think, and it ends up being a shootout, I think it'll benefit Spurs. But either way, like I said, right to open with, I just think the game, Wolves might just lose this game just because of the emotion, the new manager in there, lot of things going on. I just think Spurs feel a little bit more settled at the moment, and it comes at them at a good time. Confidence is high. Obviously, yesterday was a bit of a disaster, but could work. You know, it works well in the fact that there was no first team players there anyway. Sort of justifies where they are in there. So, yeah, I think if I had to put my neck out, I'm going to say a dull game, 1-0. Eric Dyer, corner, first.
Nuno special.
I feel like that. But it'll probably be 4-3 or 3-2 or spectacularness. Who knows?
Thank you for joining us anyway. Really appreciate your time, and I hope you're not smiling on Sunday afternoon, to be brutally honest.
Well, I'm sure they'll be giving you a large in the barbershop on Monday across every single site. Yeah, passing on the message to them.
Don't worry, cheers, you'll be getting some WhatsApp messages.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We'll see. Phone's off tomorrow, Sunday afternoon.
Cheers, Ian. Thanks for joining us.
See you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah. That was Ian Matto, Spurs fan, local boy as well. Dan, I mean, we've kind of done the Spurs game to death, I think, now. A lot's been happening at Wolves over the last week. From a departures perspective, anyway. The likes of Patrick Cutrone, Rafa Mir, and Owen Atasawi, all on their way out. I'm wondering what you're celebrating for, to be honest. You're on about PC.
You know, I love a bit of pizza. I don't mind a bit of pasta, but the sooner that guy is permanently gone from our club, the better. I'm fed up of people persevering with the Italian Andy Keogh. He's not good enough for this club. He'll never be good enough for this club. And whilst he wears a Wolf shirt, he'll never gain the confidence to be good for this club. Just sell him, get him off the wage bill. Let's move.
And let's look forward to some incomings, hopefully. I mean, I know we've got another guest waiting for us who's done quite a bit of work on having a look at prospective signings over the summer from an analytical point of view as well. Welcome, Dan. Dan Butler Analysis.
Hi, lads. How are we?
Yeah, not bad, thanks, mate. Not bad. Just talking transfer window. Obviously, outgoings have started to happen. we're desperate, if you feel this way, I think we all are, for some good news about some incomings. Today, I mean, we've been linked with Adam Olelukman, someone who I was pretty keen on from the start of the summer, to be honest. Where do we need to go from here, Dan?
Prioritising, I think, would be the main thing. I know some of the rumours are never going to be coming true, so I don't have to worry too much about that. But you hear a hell of a lot about wingers, sometimes strikers thrown in there. Feels like we're not... Listen, we're never going to understand completely what's going on inside the club. But the priority's surely got to be centre-back and either a holding midfielder to let Neves go further up, or alternatively, let Neves sit deep and get someone who's going to carry the ball from midfield. Because that's what we've had for so many years now. I mean, Moutinho and Neves was great first season because no one had really figured us out properly by that point. But by this point, I mean, they're just too similar. It's too easy to play against at this point. Moutinho's legs have gone a little bit, and I love him. He's been probably one of the best players I've ever seen in the Wolves shirt. But ultimately, we need a different kind of profile in centre midfield. And look, Lookman would be a good signing in normal times, but these aren't normal times, and it's about prioritising. And he's just not a priority at the minute, you know?
That's so frustrating to not what everything what you've just said is. Rings true. It's so frustrating that we haven't got UEFA coaching badges. We've not got business degrees in football recruitment, but it's so obvious that the priority is a centre-back. We keep getting linked to Guedes, Lookman, Kang Lee. Where is today's Dean Richards? We need a centre-back.
Yeah, look, I don't disagree. We know the club likes to sort of operate quietly at times, and maybe they've got something lined up in both positions. We don't know that. But certainly from the rumblings so far, it does look like the priorities are a little bit out of whack. And yeah, it's a little bit worrying now. I think if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd have felt a little bit more positive about it, because we've still got, you know, maybe a month to go until the transfer window closes. But here we are, what are we, 12 days out now? Less than that, maybe. And yeah. we're looking like we're scrambling a little bit. And as soon as you do that, you let other clubs know that you're going to overpay for players, and you're not in a position where you've got a lot of leverage, really.
Well, if you believe the reports, I mean, we're trying to get a convicted criminal through the door, and you know, from you know, various sources, I think there's talk of a work permit being rejected for Ruben Semedo. If, you know, I mean, it's been spoken about many times, but that constant, you know, taking our little begging bowl over to George Mendes and asking him to fill it with a player, it seems to be, you know, our last resort at every single opportunity. What are your thoughts on that at the moment?
It's frustrating because I think there's, I'll use France as an example. If you look at France, that's a footballing country right now that's got no money at all. I mean, you look at players like Aouar at Lyon. Wolves are never going to go for him, but he's a good example of a player who in a normal market is probably worth somewhere between 40 and 50 million. And Lyon are going to let him go for probably close to 20 to 25. That's a country, or that's a league, I should say, Ligue 1, that could be taken advantage of so easily. And there's so much talent out there, it's ridiculous. But because we fall back on Mendes so often, we miss out on these deals. And I don't blame, I've seen quite a few tweets in the last couple of days sort of trying to find someone to blame for all of this. And I don't think it falls on the recruitment team, because my gut feeling would be that they are finding these players. They're doing the exact same things that you'd expect them to do. They're running through the numbers. They're spending hours and hours and hours going through video. And the ultimate thing that happens is that it's the Mendes client every time. And I can't imagine how frustrating that's got to be for them.
You just mentioned the French league being sort of cherry picked. Obviously, we got Ryan Aitnori in the summer without a Mendes connection. He hasn't got a Mendes connection, has he?
I think he's part of his agency. I think, yeah.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. So it's still frustrating, like you just said. There, we're just heavy reliant. We can't look too derogatorily at the Mendes situation because of the players that he's already brought us. But there has to be a point in the road where we have to venture away from his client base, isn't that? It's just, Faustin going to make that step when they're still making a cut of all the money that he makes?
well, yeah, that's the difficulty, isn't it? It's because they own a stake in the agency. It's difficult for them to just take a step away suddenly. But I agree. I think, broadly speaking, we've got to learn to stand on our own 2 feet at some point and trust the recruitment team that are in at the club currently. Like I say, there'll be all of the players that are getting highlighted on Twitter by any sort of analytics accounts as potentially being good signings for any club. They'll be going through these players. They'll have them in the database. They'll be well aware of their strengths, weaknesses, profiles, how they fit into, how they could fit into a Bruno Lage system. Again, I don't know how much say that they actually have over these things in the end. I can't think of, you just said about Ait Nouri having some sort of Mendes influence. I didn't know that, I have to be honest with you. But other than that, I can't think of the last first team signing that we made that was had no influence from that side of things at all.
Well, I mean, Mosquera is probably one as an example, yeah, that maybe isn't part of that conversation. But I mean, you mentioned certain players getting picked out analytically. From a centre-half perspective, I know you've done some work on it from a midfield perspective. From a centre-half perspective, is there anyone that you've come across in your research that would be a good option?
It's difficult because I think, so I did a piece on sort of centre-backs we could look at over this summer, and that was probably a couple of months ago now. But since then, I've sort of got a better understanding of what a centre-back partnership should look like. And it's that cat-dog relationship of one that sits off the ball a little bit more and one that attacks the ball. So Mosquera, for example, is a good example of what a dog would be, chasing after the ball, sometimes getting pulled out to midfield, out of position. And then your cat sat a little bit deeper to mop up like that. So the players that I highlighted in that piece. I had Mavropanos, who was on loan, I think it's Stuttgart, oh, yeah, from Arsenal. And he ranked really well, basically, across the board in the numbers I was looking at. But if I was to go back and do that piece again, I think I would take into account more things like trying to find that balance with centre-back partnership. Yeah. So off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. I think it's Stefan Posch, I think, who plays out in Germany. I need to check where he plays at the minute. But he can play right back and he can play centre back, and he looks like a really good fit. But again, when I was looking through those numbers, I was looking for something different to what I think we need now. I think what we do need is a less aggressive centre back. If you go through who's on the books right now, yeah, you've got Sace, Bolly, Mosquera. Everyone is going to attack that ball, apart from probably Cody, who I think is well established now. He's not going to play in a four. So I can't offer you just names off the top of my head.
No, that's totally fair. That's totally fair. We do have the benefit of a 90-minute Premier League fixture to look back on, though. And one player who did come out with credit, I think, across the board was Max Kilman. I liked the way that he came out with the ball, and he seemed to have a little bit more of a remit to start attacks and use his ability that, you know, we've always joked about with futsal links and all that kind of thing. Where do you see him fitting? Maybe do you see him perhaps being more of a fixture? Because it doesn't look like he's on his way out.
No, I think he's sort of, I think in the summer, sort of probably prior to pre-season, if you'd asked me then, I probably would have said he could have done with a loan out, maybe a middle to top end championship club, and just see how he gets on there, playing week in, week out, really physical league, just see how he gets on there. But I think he's played himself into contention, you know. I think I wasn't his biggest fan, but there are times when he picks the ball up from deep and he can drag a striker with him and he can come in field with it. And I think he offers something a little bit different in that sense. You wouldn't find someone like Cody, who's incredibly risk averse, ever doing something like that. And I think Bolly used to do it. When Bolly would play on the left of a back three when we were in the championship, he'd come inside with the ball and then he'd find Douglas or he'd find John on the left. And it opened up a whole new sort of dynamic as to how we could play through opposition, through deep blocks especially. I think, like I say, if you'd asked me a couple of months ago, probably send the film on loan. But now, all of a sudden, he's looking like one of the best options, which probably says quite a lot about the recruitment in general, but
true,
it gives
him
a chance, you know?
You know my opinions on Kilman, Gully, and even I was sort of taken aback at how assured and composed he was on Saturday. At the start of the season, he would have been one of the first players I'd have had out the door just to try and give the guy some experience or maybe try and get some money to improve. But under the new sort of era, under Bruno Lage, he's definitely played himself into contention. I think the likes of Saiss and Den Donker, I think their sort of careers to a degree in a defensive way are finished at Wolves.
I mean, yeah, perhaps defensively, but again, with the numbers that came out of the Leicester fixture, Romain Saiss was really important in moving the ball forward for us, and he generally is. So, you know, I think part of it probably is we don't want to see the same back three for the last three, four seasons. You know, these are all players that have been part of championship sides and things, which probably just doesn't sit right with us. I think we do fall into the trap with Kilman of thinking about his history as a footballer in terms of coming from Maidenhead and maybe not being the flashiest player, but if he'd have come through, I don't know, a Premier League side, academy, and we'd signed him from, I don't know, a Chelsea or a Liverpool or something like that, we might have felt a little bit more optimistic about the way he plays. But moving kind of up the pitch, and I know you mentioned you're going to have a bit more of an in-depth look at him, Dan. Adama Traore, we've spoken about the fact that I think he accumulated the most XG in a fixture than in his entire Premier League career on Saturday. He's not a player who tends to get a lot of chances, and maybe having him off the left is going to bring him into those kind of positions going forward. The ultimate quandary, he creates those chances himself, doesn't take them, but would we be in those positions without him? How do you solve a problem like Traoré at this point?
How long you got? yeah, I'm gonna have a piece out on him probably sometime next week. I go in quite a lot of depth about sort of players and stuff like that on Twitter, but I can't find a better way of saying it other than it just does my head in. It's so frustrating watching someone who's been blessed with so many physical gifts that I feel it's almost meant that he doesn't have to develop, or he feels he doesn't have to develop other parts of his game as much. It means that he can afford to have a heavier touch at times because he knows he's got the pace or he's got the strength. He can fend off a challenge if he needs to, if he gets into that situation. You mentioned the XG from the Leicester game. It was a little bit misleading because I think, it was about 0.78, something like that, he'd accumulated. Yeah. Around there. 0.5 something of that was from the one chance. There was a lot of talk about the shots he had taken. Yeah, they were horrible locations, and it was into bodies as well. And I got the premise of the article that went out. I think it was on Sky that everyone was sharing the other day about it. But I'd sort of urge caution when it comes to looking at XG over one game, and especially when it's so heavily skewed by one sort of chance that's come about. I've got questions as to whether finishing something probably improved, but fundamentally, do you hit a ball properly? Sometimes I feel like he doesn't actually connect with the ball properly. I'm sure we can all pick out videos off Twitter where he scored against Spurs, for example, he put it top corner. But sometimes I feel like he drags his shots. They're quite rushed at times. And as much as I love him, if I worked at Wolves and you offered me 40 mil for him now, I'd snap your hand off. Because I think you can replace his output for somewhere in the region of 20 to 25 mil. And you've got an extra 15 to play with to invest elsewhere in the squad.
It's that. I'm always held back by that fear of thinking he's going to click one day. And probably, you know, more for me in that sense. But
what is he, 25 now?
Yeah.
So, you know, at some point, a player is what he is.
I take your point entirely that he probably, as an academy player, was running rings around players to the extent where his link-up play didn't ever become a factor in his games. And he's had to develop that much later. And if you look at it now, if he's coming off the left, he can't just go get wide and put a cross in. He's going to have to come and play inside a little bit more, one-twos with Jimenez, I think, will help him. I do think he will.
Yeah, but, I agree.
Yeah. It's a make-or-break season, really, for him and his Wolves career, and probably his career as a whole. He could feel like managers across the league might think he's a busted flush if he doesn't produce. But I think we we're all quite optimistic about Sunday. What are your thoughts going into this game and how you think we're going to get on?
I feel optimistic because I think we all know what Nuno's not good at, and that's breaking down low blocks at times. I think if we sit 5 yards deeper, it's going to sound a little bit negative, but I think you have to approach every game differently. You sit 5 yards, 10 yards deeper against this Spurs side, it doesn't fill me with a lot of fear. That midfield three is quite functional. I know they can play Dele Alli there, and he's a more creative player. But Skip and Højbjerg, and we know Ndombele is not going to be playing because he's on his way out. You can get at that Spurs side, I think, as long as you don't play too high a line, is basically where I would go. And if we approach it in the right manner, I think we can turn them over. I don't think it's going to be easy by any stretch. I think that, you know, man for man, they're miles ahead of us. But we know if those players don't know what Nuno's weaknesses are, they haven't been paying attention for the last 4 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We know how a Nuno team loses because we've seen it. We've definitely seen it over the last 18 months at least. I think they're there to be got at.
You look at their back four, Tanganga, Davinson Sanchez, Eric Dier. Reguilón's good going forward, but I think that back four is definitely there to be got at. Hopefully, I put the tweet out earlier, Raul and Adama's to combine to get that goal on a Sunday. I think it's happening. I think it's written in the stars that Raul's going to score on Sunday.
I certainly hope so. The roof will come off the place if he does. It'd be unbelievable.
Yeah. We are very much looking forward to the game on Sunday. If you want to put your neck on the line, well, we're going to put your neck on the line, Dan, and get a score out of you. So, please.
I'll go, you know, I'll play a little bit conservative and I'll say 1-1, but I do think if we set up properly, it's there for the taking. There's a 1-0, there's a 2-1 on the cards.
We'll put you down for a 2-1 then, don't worry. We'll
yeah, do
back.
It. Why not?
We'll come back to you.
What's your prediction, Gulliv?
Well, no, this is what I was going to move on to, Dan, because, you know, we can't be running the show here and not be, you know, offering our own thoughts. I thought 2-1. I think, like I say, there's a lot to come from this forward line, from my perspective. And I think Neves and Moutinho can have an influence on this game. We've got a decent record performance-wise, maybe not results-wise. I think we always play well, generally speaking, against Spurs. I'm optimistic. And going back to the atmosphere and the place being rocking, yeah, how's that not going to carry the team on? It has to. So yeah, 2-1, put me down for it.
I'm going 3-1 Wolves. I just honestly believe it's going to be one of them special days when the atmosphere, and if Nuno, for whatever reason, doesn't get his, the Tottenham captain, who's Tottenham captain at the moment for Kane out?
Højbjerg, probably.
Højbjerg doesn't win that coin toss.
Was it Lloris? No, it'd be Lloris, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Lloris.
So if he doesn't win that coin toss and we're shooting towards the safe bank in the second half, it's 3-1 Wolves.
Jimenez going to know to turn it round as well, isn't he? That's the problem. Yeah.
Jimenez 2, Trincao 1, Wolves 3, Tottenham 1. That's where my money's going.
Have you got any odds on that?
No. You could get Raul at 3.15-1 score any time. That was the best odds I saw earlier.
That's okay. Well,
that would pay for a takeaway from one of our friends at Wolverhampton Eats tonight.
Absolutely, it will. So, guys, if you haven't figured out what you want to do for dinner, make sure you download the app and have a look on there. We will call it a night there, and we can all get down the pub and have a good Friday evening. Thank you for joining us, as always, supported by the Kings Winford Sports Shop, and we are part of the 90 Min Network, as you know. Please make sure you tune into all of our socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and, you know, there'll be a stream of content coming throughout the week, and hopefully off the back of a positive result on Sunday afternoon. So from me, Dan, and Dan, good evening, guys, and speak soon.
See you later, lads.
See ya.